Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Buzz! 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 Buzz!
Welcome into a special At the Buzzer edition, your Ralph Report podcast. We say every single one is special, Sam, but this one actually is for good reason, because it's not just you and me talking at each other. We have a special guest in Ben Burrows coming out of the show, Rumble Buffalo himself. How you doing,
what's
Ben?
What's going on, fellas? Really happy to be here, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we figured we wait until the best possible moment this basketball season. We're at our highest before my called shot of the ASU loss. So we'd love to have you back.
I'm sure we'll get to predictions for Thursday night. And as you've alluded to, I'm incredibly nervous about it. But but yeah, for right now, I think it's good to take a step back and look at where we've been this season, how far we've come, and kind of celebrate for a little bit. A pretty special team that we've been blessed with in this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that don't know, Ben Burrows is the guy to listen to react with on Twitter. If you're thinking about looking at CU basketball games, watching CU basketball games, he was the
also
guaranteed scribe. Go ahead.
Whenever I'm live tweeting and I'm like lost a little bit or I need to like think of something, I'll just look at Ben's insights. And that I can pretty much do a recap just from that.
There
so everybody should be following you.
Yeah. When you stare into Dry's eyes for too long and you forget what you were thinking about, Sam.
Yeah. Well, I fuck around on Twitter for most of the game and I stop watching the basketball game, usually in the second half.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what I'm looking at either. And luckily there are fans out there that do. And obviously Rumblin' Buffalo is the main one. So I'm so glad to have him on. My only agenda item is to talk about how great Treshawn Fletcher was and how much I miss him. But after that, I think it's everything else we could talk about.
Were you a big fan of the Toledo years of Treshawn Fletcher?
Hey, what was he, 20-10 near the end there?
He was a monster in the match. Oh, man.
He got himself some money, and I always thought he had it in him. I wish he was a little more aggressive, but it was a crowded CU team, and I'm glad that he found the space to thrive. Absolutely. What a guy. Let's see. What's top of mind, Sam? The newly ranked Colorado Buffaloes.
Well, newly ranked. Finally, we get the nice little meaningless ranking, which vindicates everything we've been watching. Because like this team has been like a top 25 team the entire season. I've
interesting.
Argued.
Yeah, I think and no doubt. Yeah, absolutely. This team has clearly been a high quality, high caliber, efficient team. And when you're looking at Pac-12, you know, whatever you want to say about the Pac-12, it is still a Power 5 conference. Mm-hmm. And Colorado has clearly been one of the top teams in the conference. That it's taken this long to get any sort of national recognition, official national recognition. There's been a number of writers who have thought of us as a top 25 team all year. You kind of look at, well, why is that? And obviously this year with COVID and all that has been topsy-turvy. The non-conference schedule outside of the Tennessee game, which was very, very hastily organized, was maybe not as good as previous years and things like that. But when you look at game to game, performance to performance, it's very clear they passed the eye test. This is a good basketball team.
Yeah. And every time, like they were floating on like number 32 to 26, they'd always climb their way towards 26. and then they'd lose a game right there, and then they'd fall back down, and then keep winning and keep winning, and then fall back down. And so it's been like a yo-yo of just
that's like a program. Almost
getting in.
That's a program cornerstone, though. That's a, that's a program cornerstone. That's a University of Colorado cornerstone. Whatever the sport is, whatever yeah. two steps forward we take, it's going back for at least one. So
there's an old Outfit Report article before I think I started writing, and after Spencer Dinwiddie tore his ACL, that was titled "The Sisyphean Fate of Colorado Basketball." I think about that a lot. Yeah. Where it's just like that's what happened. The ceiling was hard capped, and I'm glad we finally broke it this year. I also think to Ben's point, there's been a little more pole inertia than usual. Just I think there's less time in the preseason to shake some of that stuff out. And you know, Kentucky took like what a month to drop fully, I think, from the polls. And we all knew they weren't good that whole time. But it's just hard to shake preseason from actual when you're jumping right into conference season. I think.
I mean, I think Duke was like ranked in the top 20 with like a 500 record at some point this year.
Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, North Carolina. These are all teams that. These are brands that you just slap in the top 25, and if you don't watch the games, you go, oh yeah, I'm sure they're fine. This has been a crazy year for a lot of teams, and I think part of what's been very gratifying for me is that Colorado has not only lived up to the challenge of this topsy turvy year and the last minute reschedulings and 3 o'clock mid afternoon on a Wednesday tip off times and all this other stuff. But they've kept themselves healthy. They've kept themselves playing. I remember I was in a coach talk chat at the start of the year, and Tad said, first we got to play the games and then we got to win them. And if you're looking at big wins this year, they played all their games. They got all 20 Pac-12 games in, and or will once they play Thursday night, hopefully. I've just been impressed at how this team has remained focused and churning throughout the year.
I don't know if it'll show up that fully, but I do think that there's something to, I think they tie with Kansas and maybe a few other teams for the most games played so far this year. Colorado is tied at number one of the few others, but I wonder if there's something to that experience counting later this year in March, because that's just more time on the court, especially for players like Jabari. I feel like that's just an opportunity that didn't exist other years with this red shirt and making sure he has the maximum time possible to affect the game. I don't know. I feel like that's going to pay dividends either next year or at the end of this year more than it would have other years.
Well, it's certainly important for Jabari and Tristan and sure. And the younger players on the roster, but you also have to remember this is a team with top 30 amount of experience year over year, and that was one of the things that I was surprised about in terms of national perception, even Pac-12 perception of where this team would be coming into the season. You've got all this experience returning. You got McKinley Wright leading the crew. You've got players who have consistently performed at a Pac-12 level. Why was there so negative a perception of this team coming in? I get Tyler Bayes leaving. I get that aspect of it, but it's not that big of a hit. Tyler is a unique player, but that's not a program defining kind of player in the way McKinley Wright is, and next year will be its own beast.
But I think Jack was even surprised when we were doing a season preview when I said undoubtedly this is a top, like this is an NCAA tournament quality team.
That's what I thought. I thought that if it's a bad season, we're in the NIT. I didn't necessarily think, oh, we could be climbing, in the top 15, of KenPom kind of team. But I certainly thought this is a tournament team, and they've lived up to that.
Yeah, I think like an emergence would be like Jariah Horn has been honestly a much better offensive player than Tyler Bay was.
Better than almost anyone in the conference, I think, this year.
His numbers are insane, and we just got to find a way to keep him on the court. But that's the weirdest thing about Jabari is coming.
I meant Jariah. Did I say Jabari? I was talking about Jariah Horn.
You might have. I heard Jabari.
Well, I mean Jabari too, but go ahead. Because I know you have some thoughts on Jabari.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Jabari's been, you know, a breath of fresh air off the bench when you're looking to replace a Tyler Bay. Maybe that's why I had it in the back of my mind. Is, you know, because in my mind, there's a linear path between Ty and Jabari. Not because they're the same kind of player, but they provide that same level of athleticism on both ends of the court. But, you know, him being able to come in and contribute offensively, because at the start of the season, we're looking at holes and where are you going to fill them and all that kind of stuff. And not a lot was expected of the freshman offensively. There was some hope that Jabari could contribute defensively, and you know where's Luke O'Brien been? You know, there have been some hope that Luke could contribute offensively and all that. But Jabari being in his per 40 numbers, you know, an outstanding conference level player, it's been a breath of fresh air. And something in terms of freshman and looking forward that you're like, oh, I can't wait to see him as a sophomore. If we can keep him on the court and keep the foul numbers down, that's going to be fantastic.
What's his fouls per 40 minutes?
It's six, I think. Hold on. I got the sheet in front of me.
God, that USC game was so brutal. I was so excited to see
seven him now.
And then the USC game, he had like, what was it? It was Evan Mobley just got through two fouls in like 2 minutes. And I thought,
okay. Yeah, he had, yeah, Jabari right. had four fouls in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But he's getting adjusted again. It's been 3 weeks since he played.
Yeah, and he was out. And I certainly wouldn't hold that kind of thing against him. And, you know, part of his game is aggressiveness in trying to create plays and trying to, you know, be aggressive on help and aggressive on the boards. You're going to pick up fouls like that. And I think
can't be reaching over though.
Yeah. Reaching and all that stuff. And part of the maturation, and Evan had his own struggles in previous years. Part of the maturation is you can't pick up cheap fouls. You got to be smart. And hopefully sometime the program will teach him that, because if he clears that up, oh man, this guy's going to be special.
Did you have any preseason expectations for Tristan Da Silva?
None whatsoever. and that's not a knock against the kid. And, you know, every count I've heard is he's a really good kid and has a good family and good background. And he's a talented player. Obviously he's playing in the Pac-12. But in terms of, you know, late class kind of signing, came out of nowhere, nowhere near as heralded or as considered a recruit as his brother is or was, you know, I had absolutely no expectation for him. And, you know, the first couple weeks, I think that was bearing out. And you know, there's always the thoughts of this program's recent track history with European recruits and things like that. But I think
Thomas Akazili is – do you want to guess where he's playing?
Still Lazar Nikolic fanboy right here.
Nikolic is playing in Italy. I just looked up, and Akazili is balling out in Turkey.
Oh, hey, have fun, guys. But Tristan has figured out a role. I think he's got a really high basketball IQ. He's figured out his role. He knows how to contribute, and his minutes are valuable. And, you know, between Jabari and between Tristan, to have found those kind of caliber minutes up front where we didn't project to have a lot of front court depth coming into the season has been massive, absolutely massive.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the biggest thing that I've been surprised by overall the roster is I think everyone's hitting the role that I was expecting to. I think some people have exceeded my expectations. And really, I knew it in the back of my mind. I was just hoping that Nick Clifford would be the first Colorado recruit to make the jump from 3A to college ball like in 1 year. And that just didn't happen. Yeah, it's tough. When you see him out there, he just looks like he's still catching up speed wise.
That's a common theme with Colorado recruits and Tag, God bless him, is routine and going into Colorado and getting the best players from the state, which hadn't happened prior to his arrival, really, you know, at least in recent decades. So kudos to Tad for that. But there's always something in the back of my mind when we get a high caliber Colorado recruit that even includes Josh Scott, you know, where I know that there is going to be a ramp up between 4A, 3A, even 5A Colorado basketball and Pac-12, even when we're in non-conference. And, you know, it's not as steep of a curve maybe for a kid from Texas, a kid from California, you know, kid from other states that have deeper high school ranks. And it's not a knock on the kids. It's not even really a knock on Colorado. It just is what it is.
Yep. Collier, Schwartz, Clifford, all took, I don't know. Those are all top 100 Colorado recruits, and – they still, I mean, I, at the end of the day, I still like what Collier and Schwartz did for the program, but they did not come in, I guess, as complete packages right away, like other top 100 recruits might have. So that's the only guy I could point to where I was really like, I think they're playing less minutes than I expected. Everyone else, I'm still so shocked by
just, argued that Keyshawn Bartholomew should be in the starting lineup.
At the beginning of the year, yes.
Yes, but at the beginning of the
year. And it quickly played himself out of starting lineup at the beginning of the year.
Steep learning curve again. Remember, he's a young redshirt freshman. He came in a year early. He's a guy who, you know, similar to what you just alluded to, I'm kind of disappointed with how Keyshawn has performed this year, but I still see the promise. I still see the hope, and there's going to be a lot relying on him when we transition to years ahead without Ken.
I don't even want to think about that.
Well, Let's think about happier things, which games with Ken. I think we saw two of the biggest in his career this past week, which we touched briefly on. But so you just finished a homestand against the two LA schools, USC and then UCLA, and against my prognostication, at least they swept both. So finally got the UCLA monkey off their backs. And now they're looking at a last game against Arizona State. But really, to me, that was the two games that McKinley Wright just decided not to lose for both of them. And it was just amazing to watch him.
Well, it was interesting in the game against USC because Dario was going off and a lot of the press was going to him. But it was really hard for me to overlook what Kim was doing from facilitating. And you know, as Ted noted after the game, someone's got to hit the shot. You know, just because you give him the ball in a good spot doesn't mean you didn't get an assist. But McKinley showed in those two games, first against USC with the more hybrid, you know, assists and points, and then against UCLA where it was much more the scoring effort from him, that, you know, he is just a complete, you know, destructive force at the college level, and in a way that, you know, even Spencer Dinwiddie, I don't know, was this kind of all-encompassing player. Spencer was a unique fit both for roster and time, but in terms of a guy who can literally drag a team kicking and screaming across the finish line of a game, Ken's up there. You know, he is certainly up there. And you know, looking back at his career, those two games, it's a sweet taste on the mouth that he's going out on. And in the same way, and I compared it the night of the UCLA game to the Josh Gott's two final games. He had two monsters against ASU and Arizona. You know, it helps you remember all the little, you know, from hitting the game winner in that non-conference tournament as a freshman, all through, you know, every single game along the way where you're just like stunned at how good and impactful he can be. Those two games are just perfect encapsulations of who McKinley Wright is, what kind of basketball player he is, and what he meant to the program.
How dangerous do you think the Buffs are if this version of McKinley Wright is going to be, like, he's just going to be this aggressive the rest of the year because it's going to be do or die? Yeah, not losing version.
I was talking to a friend the other night, and you know, would you, and his essentially came down to, you know, what do you think about any potential matchup in March? And I kind of laughed, and I was like, as long as we're not playing Baylor or Gonzaga or Illinois or maybe even Michigan, we could beat or lose to any team in the country. Yeah. Which is kind of an interesting aspect. If McKinley's on, I think that more leans to the beat side, that we can beat in the country. You know, there's such an interesting dynamic with this team. If those shots are falling, you know, if Dariah and Maddox and Deshaun are all hitting shots and the spacing on the floor opens up and Ken's able to get to the lane and he's getting calls from officials who aren't, for whatever reason, you know, disregarding his ability to get to the rim, and Evan's not in foul trouble. This is a damn good basketball team, you know, but, you know, it's like anything. If those shots aren't falling and if Evan's in foul trouble and Ken's not getting calls, it becomes a lot difficult. But that's the same way for everybody. If you look across the country, you know, Baylor lost the game the other night as because their three-point shooting didn't emerge like it has all season long. So there's really no difference between Colorado and a lot of other teams across the country in that regard.
I mean, this is going to be a very chaotic NCAA tournament with only a handful of truly good teams and the rest being erratic at best.
Well, and also we talked about kind of the seeding difficulty that arises from a year where non-conference schedules were coin flips of are the games going to happen and, you know, schedules getting moved around. How do you evaluate a team like Colorado State who didn't play for essentially a month? It becomes difficult to seed. And if it becomes difficult to seed, then it becomes, you know, all right, are these two teams really belonging in the same game together in the first and second rounds? So I'm expecting a lot of upsets. I could be wrong, but I am expecting a lot of upsets for the first couple days of the tournament.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also think it's also crazy how stable the favorite's going to be. It's weird because it's like there's going to be so many upsets, but really, who's not picking Gonzaga at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Michigan was a pick, and then they literally just imploded into a black hole against Illinois without – Io, Dunsumu. So, like, there's no one I would say other than Gonzaga that I would pick to win, but everyone else, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I have no clue who's going to win any other game, but I know they're going to win every single one.
On a related note, this is the best college basketball team I've seen since the Karl Anthony Towns Kentucky team. Gonzaga. Even better, maybe. Yeah.
Gonzaga is a special team. Like, And it's a shame that I guess it's not really a shame, but it's kind of weird that they play in the conference they do because WCC is a good conference, but I kind of wish they got to test themselves more in January and February. They played a great non-conference schedule, Gonzaga did.
Mm-hmm. Best in the country.
Yeah,
so
best
close
in the
to that
country.
Baylor game. God, we were so close to that Baylor.
Yeah. You know, just an insane non-conference schedule, but they haven't played a team of national caliber in 2 months. And that's a little awkward for me, but I have no doubt that they're going to flip a switch once they get to the first couple days of the tournament. No doubt at all in my mind.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts heading into Arizona State? Because I know I don't want to hear what Jack has to say, but
I'm scared. It's the ultimate trap game, isn't it?
Yeah. Nothing to gain, really.
I'm surprised Tad didn't find a way to duck that one. You know, for his, you know, I'm surprised Bobby didn't find a way to duck that one either. I don't know, there's nothing for them to play for. There's nothing for Colorado to play for. Let's just move on to Vegas, but we got to play it. So here it is. The thing that I couldn't really get over is we could end up playing Arizona State in the 4-5 game. You know, if we lose to them and a couple other games go, you know,
wait, how would they get up to the 5?
They would get up to the 6 because Arizona.
Oh, well, yeah. But still, like, I feel like last I checked, they were really far behind. But I guess the Pac-12 kind of sucks.
No. That's crazy. Oh, my God. They got up to 8, I think.
With two wins this weekend and a couple other weirdness elsewhere, all of a sudden they're the quote-unquote 5 seed, and we're playing them on Thursday next week. And it's like, okay, I definitely don't want to play this game. But obviously, you know, the Remy Kin thing, that rivalry that has stretched for 4 years, you know, Remy getting all the preseason Pac-12 Player of the Year hype, Kin answering it with his play throughout the year, the fact that Kin has beaten him so many times throughout his career, yet doesn't have the national or even regional recognition that Remy Martin does. You know, it's good to see that rivalry again. We almost didn't have it this year. So, okay, from that standpoint, yeah, I want to see those two go head to toe. It's always good to see Bobby Hurley cry. it's always good to engage in some schadenfreude from time to time. So, assuming we're able to win on Thursday night, that would be great exercise in that. You know, big things to key on is, are we getting to the line? We usually don't, but against a team like Arizona State, everyone else does. So why can't we? We got to get to the free throw line where we can take advantage of being the best free throw shooting team in the country.
This is a small team too.
Yeah, they are a very small team. That's the next point, rebounding. They're one of the worst rebounding teams in the country. And if we can't rebound against them, what the hell is going on? I've complained a couple times this year about Tad Ball being – something this team doesn't necessarily engage in. That has not been the case the last couple of weeks, particularly against UCLA. That was a very Tad Ball finish to that game. But rebounding, we got to rebound the ball against Arizona State. We can't be giving them multiple looks at the basket. And
I'm honestly more worried about Jalen House than I am Remy Martin.
That's fair. And that's kind of the final point, is you can't let other guys go off. He okay, Remy's gonna star the show. He's gonna drive. He's gonna stir the drink. All that shit.
He went 7 of 23 against Washington State for the most, the emptiest 23 points I've ever seen.
And I'm more than happy to see that happen. But you can't let other guys go off. Ultimately, it's a trap game. Are the Buffs going to be switched on? Is all the emotion from senior night, which didn't end up being our final home game, going to cause a fall off into this week? Will the team be looking ahead to the Pac-12 and the NCAA tournaments? We've seen what happens when that mindset goes against lesser opponents. And Arizona State is certainly a lesser opponent. They haven't beaten a top 100 10-pound team this year. I'm hoping that continues. But we've seen how that goes.
I think they have
They beat Stanford.
Yeah, they have two double-digit wins all year too, so they're not beating people by much when they do win.
Is Parquet going to be on Martin for this game? Is Ken going to want that matchup?
I bet Tim will want that matchup, wouldn't he?
I would think so, but generally we've seen Parquet at least in the first 30 minutes of games take the biggest threat.
And that's kind of who Eli is. Eli's a game stopper, right? And Tad loves a guy like that who will walk into the huddle and say, "I want their best shooter. I want their best player." And Eli is definitely that guy. But I gotta think Ken's gonna say, "Nope, this is me tonight."
Yeah.
Another note is that Marcus Bagley, Josh Christopher, and Jalen House are all dealing with injuries. It looks like Josh Christopher is not gonna play. Bagley hasn't played the last 10 games.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's certainly good to see him underhanded and all that. But again, it's a trap game. Regardless of circumstance, it's a trap game.
Mm-hmm. I'm worried. I don't want to be. I'm glad that Romello White is elsewhere.
Oh God, yeah. That guy's a load, man.
he was the only guy I've seen wider than Evan Batty.
Besides Andre Kelly at Cal, that good dudes.
Yeah.
That gives him fits. Go ahead.
I don't know. I think that Verge is another guy I'm terrified of in this game if he gets hot. I guess if Parquet is taking Verge, it makes me a little at ease. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of Dallas Walton this game. I don't know where he fits exactly with like playing their, you know, who's guarding, because they don't have anyone that's too tall or wide. So I think we're going to see more Horn than Walton this game for sure.
Yeah, but that also might mean more Maddox Daniels than Walton.
Try to spread it out a little bit more. Dallas is certainly a matchup guy, and yeah, this is not his kind of matchup. He's not a guy who can go out and guard a stretch four and things like that. He really just can't. Because he gets lost in the mix. So yeah, this is not a Dallas game, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I still think I have to stick to my guns. I just can't. They're not going to be focused, and this team has decided. I think, or not decided, but shown that sometimes when they're not focused, they just drop games they shouldn't have. And I think going 2-1 in these games is what I thought, and I don't know. I really don't want that to happen. I don't necessarily think that will happen, but my paranoid brain says I have to stick to my guns and say that I'm expecting a loss, hoping for a win at this point, which makes no sense and it shouldn't happen. But I feel like I have to. I don't know. It just terrifies me. It's so weird. I'm more scared of Arizona State than USC. It's just so strange.
I called a 3-0 sweep, so I'll stick to that too. But I don't think that they're going to lack focus on their final home game. I think that they're going to take it seriously because, like, again, like we did see senior night, but this will be McKinley Wright's last game at CU Event Center. He's not going to let them lose.
That's fair. You know, I'm expecting it to be ugly. I'm expecting it to be real ugly, to be honest. You know, Colorado hasn't let a team score more than 62 points in about 2 weeks at this point. I'm expecting it to be a low scoring slug it out affair, which is not a game Arizona State is necessarily comfortable in, but nonetheless, it's going to be the game kind of game they're going to find themselves in. I think it's going to be a struggle, but I will still believe the Buffs find a way to win at the end, something in the low, like 65, 60 range. But it'll be a game that is not comfortable.
And it will kill us all.
A part of your soul will die watching it.
Are they going to try to speed us up? I feel like they have to.
Yeah, that's tempo is a big dynamic change between here. Colorado loves, they're one of the best in the country at forcing opponents to draw possessions, 343rd in opponent possession length, whereas Arizona State is very up tempo. They want to get up and down. But we've seen what happens to teams who try to run in Boulder in the past. That's why Dana at Oregon has never won up here. They keep trying to press, they keep trying to run. You can't do that in Boulder against us. That is often a double-edged sword. And from that standpoint, if they do try to speed it up too much, they could find themselves in a world of hurt.
Mm. I'm excited. Not really, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. Excited. I just want to get it over with. Like Ben said, I don't know if Tad tried to get out of this game and the Pac-12 forced him, or if Bobby Hurley was, I don't know. I can't imagine either team wanting to play this. I certainly don't want to watch this. So just get it over with and move on. Please don't make me regret watching this game. Oh God. I'm just so scared.
Arizona State. What are we doing, Dad?
I know, but it's like, I don't know. CU's lost to Cal. CU's lost to Utah at home. CU's lost to Washington, and then everywhere else they're fine. And it's like, I'm just so nervous about that version where they just had a great game, great set of games, just like they had against Stanford, and they decide, it's just Arizona State. And I'm just worried. I guess it's at home, and I don't know if they're going to let that happen.
And they hate Arizona State too much.
That's a good point.
They're
gonna see that logo on the schedule, and they're gonna care about it because those games are always worse.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess Tad probably has some more animosity for Bobby than he does for Mark Fox or Mike Hopkins.
That Ben, do you have any final thoughts? Anything you want to promote before the Zoom kicks us out?
Well, nothing really to promote. You can always find me on Twitter at Rumblin' Buffalo. Always happy to engage with anyone who wants to shout at me on there. Just looking forward to watching the guys in the postseason. Looking forward to next year when I actually get back in the gym. Looking forward to moving on and getting back to sports as normal. But for now, I'm excited to see him in March. I'm excited to see him in the tournament, and I'm excited to see how far they can go.
All right, I've got to add.
Done. Yeah, cool. Thanks, Ben.
Cool. Thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yep.
Yeah, take care.
Yep, take care.
Buzz! Buzz!